You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. There are two stories that are dominating this week's news cycle. One is the speech that Donald Trump gave in Florida, mainly to a group of Cuban Americans, with Senator Marco Rubio, a Cuban American, leading off. And that is the partial reversal of the Obama administration previous executive order, followed up by a trip by Barack Obama to Cuba to increase and have better relations with Cuba. The problem is, since 1962, especially after the Bay of Pigs failed, and remember, it was a liberal Democrat, John F. Kennedy, that gave the go-ahead for the Bay of Pigs, with the understanding that if it was going badly, the U.S. would intervene by providing military aircraft in support of the Cuban exiles that were mainly, well, they were the fighters, trained by the CIA. You see, the United States has been intervening in country after country after country, really since the end of World War II, around the world, whether it's South America, Central America, Cuba, Middle East, Southeast Asia. We have become the policemen of the world. The only other alternative is the United Nations, which has been really an utter failure in terms of in that role. It's a rather corrupt organization, a failed institution, and quite frankly, if you've listened to past shows, I would withdraw the United States from the United Nations, and then hopefully the United Nations would move out of the United States. Do I think it's going to happen? No. Because we do get some intelligence from the fact that we have, well, nearly 200 nations in the United Nations. And they come to New York City, and it's a perfect place to recruit agents and gather intelligence as well. So for that reason alone, I don't think it's going to happen. But as far as I can see, that the United Nations was the ideal and push by progressives, whether it was Woodrow Wilson with the League of Nations, FDR with the United Nations, and it just simply has failed. It's a useless institution because most of the nations are authoritarian or totalitarian. It's not a club that you would like to join. Despite the rhetoric, it's corrupt, really corrupt to the core. Nice, pretty building, but as far as I'm concerned, they should convert it to apartments or tear it down and put something else in its place. And I frankly don't care where it goes, because when an institution has that record, and this is not a show about the United Nations, but since I touched upon it, it just hasn't fulfilled its ideals. I'm not saying it doesn't do any good. It hopefully does some good. The one thing they have promoted, and really promoting wealth redistribution, is the real reason they promote it, is climate change, which is largely junk science supported by big government with the objective of transferring United States wealth and the wealth of developed countries to the undeveloped countries. I say try free enterprise market capitalism. The problem is you can't do that where you have authoritarian regimes doesn't matter what form they take, and where you do, it's corruption. So Donald Trump has modified the executive order that President Obama signed and followed in on. And what I wanted you to have the opportunity is to at least hear some of his speech that he gave in Florida. Let's listen to President Trump explaining his Cuba policy.
Our policy will seek a much better deal for the Cuban people and for the United States of America. We do not want U.S. dollars to prop up a military monopoly that exploits and abuses the citizens of Cuba. For nearly six decades, the Cuban people have suffered under communist domination. To this day, Cuba is ruled by the same people who killed tens of thousands of their own citizens, who sought to spread their repressive and failed ideology throughout our hemisphere, and who once tried to host enemy nuclear weapons 90 miles from our shores.
Now, that was Donald Trump's short version. I want to give a longer version in a minute. Really, what I would like to see is a vote in the House of Representatives, in the Senate. Again, I don't think it's going to happen. But remember, if you believe in a representative republic, which I do, the American people attitude towards Cuba has gradually changed. It doesn't mean Cuba has changed. It's just as authoritarian, just as corrupt as it always has been. And I agree with Trump that a large percentage of the money of tourists going to Cuba in the hotels, casinos, wherever, will go to the military and prop up that regime. Eventually, the people of Cuba will rebel. It's difficult because under a communist Castro regime, they don't have a Bill of Rights. They can't keep or carry weapons. They don't have a free press. They suppress dissent. That's why Cubans have largely fleeing Cuba, coming to the United States. But Obama ended the so-called wet foot policy. If you had your wet foot land on U.S. soil, you would not be deported. However, if the U.S. Navy or the Coast Guard, primarily the Coast Guard, intercepted you at sea, they would take you back, send you back. And that's interesting because, with the exception of Cuba, we have an open door policy. So it's a little inconsistency on the part of Obama. Now, the left, the lying lunatic left, together with big lie media, they lean left. I said last show, the Democratic Party of my father and his generation was primarily centrist, liberal, a little left of center, but they weren't progressives, they weren't communists, they weren't socialists. Not anymore. The Democratic Party, that Democratic Party, days have passed, and many would say for the best. You see, both political parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, have moved further and further to the left, and you see that in the size of the federal government growing and growing and growing. Where at one time, the federal government as a percent of the economy was less than 3%. Today, it's routinely over 19%. It got as high as 24%. And that's just the federal government. You still have city, county, and state. See, both parties are big government parties. They want to grow the government at all levels. And that's why today we have a national debt of $20 trillion and unfunded liabilities of over $200 trillion. It doesn't end well. I think this whole thing blows up. The debt bomb blows up most likely in the 2030s. Could be earlier. It could be a little later, but I don't see much beyond 2040. It becomes unsustainable because you got it when you issue debt to pay your bills, and that's what we're doing. We're putting a big burden on future generations. We're living way beyond the means of the American people, and neither political party is up to making fundamental change. And the easiest way to see it is, can they balance the budget? Now, let me make very, very clear. The way Democrats would balance the budget is just increase taxes higher and higher and higher. That would destroy economic incentives. That's not the way. But the lying lunatic left in this country largely supports regimes like the Castro regime that kills tens of thousands of Cubans and hundreds of thousands, really millions, fled Cuba to the United States. Now let's listen more, a little bit more, on Donald Trump's speech. This is a very friendly crowd.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much. Great honor. And thank you to my truly great friend, Vice President Mike Pence. He's terrific. And thank you to Miami. We love Miami. Let me start by saying that I'm glad Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and I, along with a very talented team, were able to get Otto Warmbier back with his parents. What's happened to him is a truly terrible thing, but at least the ones who love him so much can now take care of him and be with him. Also, my dear friend, Steve Scalise, took a bullet for all of us. And because of him and the tremendous pain and suffering he's now enduring, and he's having a hard time, far worse than anybody thought, our country will perhaps become closer, more unified. So important. So we all owe Steve a big, big thank you.
Now, let me interject a couple of points here. The assassin that wounded several people, including Scalise. Scalise was the Republican majority whip, and hopefully he'll get better. He's in critical condition now. He's had several operations. But what triggered the assassin? Why did he come from Michigan, travel all the way from Michigan to Virginia, and plan an attack on Republican congressmen and senators that were preparing for an annual charitable baseball game between Democrats and Republicans? Why did he do that? You see, we've had now months upon months of rhetoric by big lie media, the newspapers, television networks, trying to demonize, marginalize, and stir up their base. First it was, we're going to impeach him. This is in the early days and weeks of his administration. Impeachment is a political process, and keep that in mind. It's very much a political process. And whoever you impeach has to have done something wrong, illegal, criminal. And that requires a vote in the House. It's like an indictment. And then it goes to the Senate. Now, the Senate is fairly evenly divided. The Democrats know their chances of getting an impeachment on Donald Trump are slim and none. It's not that some Republicans wouldn't vote for it. There are. You know, the reason I'm no longer a Democrat or Republican, I've seen the light. I know what they're about. Both parties have been corrupted by money. The politicians are largely either paid for or rented. And who's calling the tune? The people that own America, the wealthiest. And they buy their politicians. And I would say upwards of half of the Republican Party, although the numbers do change depending on what the law is, would probably vote for impeachment if the articles of impeachment were halfway reasonable. Right now, they don't have any, other than this fairy tale that Donald Trump and his campaign has colluded with the Russians. There's been no, and I mean no, zero, none, proof at all, evidence that he's done that. Now, does that stop big lie media from fanning the flames? Their goal is to impeach and convict Donald Trump. However, the leadership of the Democratic Party is getting nervous because they know they can't truly deliver on this. They haven't found anything, and that's their problem, their challenge. There's no crime, no collusion, as much as they want you to think there is. But they still accuse Donald Trump of doing things that they can't prove, and calling the worst president in U.S. history. They have a resistance, and the rhetoric is getting crazy. They're sounding like lunatics. That's why I call them the lying lunatic left. They're lying because they can't tell the truth. If they told the truth, they'd never get elected to anything. That's why they have to lie. Lunatic, because some of the things they believe in, nobody believes in his right mind. That has reason. But a lot of people in their base, I call them the Kool-Aid drinkers, the true believers, and they're in all political parties. True believers that believe what a party says, what a candidate says. You're always going to have people like that. They're not critical thinkers. Reason is not their strong suit. Slogans and believing propaganda, and you better believe what big lie media is doing is putting out progressive propaganda. They know what they're doing. It's no accident that over 90% of the media in this country favored Hillary Clinton. That was their candidate, just like Obama was two times in a row. Hillary Clinton should never have lost because she had the media behind her, money behind her, the sitting president behind her, although there is some friction there. And everyone thought that Hillary Clinton would be the next president. And big lie media put out poll after poll, you can take it to the bank. Well, surprise, surprise. It didn't work. But what happens when you have this propaganda machine day after day, I mean all the time, and people listen to that, and that's all they listen to, many of them will and are radicalized. And then you get the nuts that decide to drive from Michigan to Virginia with weapons to kill people they don't know, don't understand. But that didn't stop them. The reason why we didn't have a massacre at the baseball field was because of two Capitol Police officers that were guarding who? The House Majority Whip. If they weren't there, that assassin could have killed at least a dozen or more people. Senators, congressmen, their staff, and maybe even children. He was enraged. He intended to do what he did and was partially successful. He wounded. I think the total count is 4 or 5. I keep being a little confused on that. You see, you would think, and I would have thought, because in most states, not most states, in all 50 states, you do have concealed carry permits that enable people, especially people like congressmen and senators that do daily get threats on their lives, carry a weapon for their own protection. But because Congress is in Washington, D.C., that has high murder rates, as does Chicago, they have strict gun laws. It's almost next to impossible to get a concealed carry permit. You see, where the American people can have weapons and carry them to protect themselves, all the research shows crime goes down. And in situations where, for example, on campuses today, most of the college campuses, not all, but literally most, are gun-free zones. What's troubling is on many campuses, I'm sitting on one, next to literally about 100 feet down the hall, there's a meditation room. Who uses that meditation room? And let me quickly say, I have nothing against meditation. I have nothing against prayer, but this is a state-supported, the people of Texas-supported school, both through state subsidies as well as local taxation. We have a system of 7 community colleges in the Dallas area, in Dallas County. All of them are gun-free zones. Oh, yes, we have police officers and cameras all over the campus. But it would take at least 3 to 5 minutes, maybe longer, for police officers to get to a point on campus where you have a problem. And most of the people that are in that meditation room are Muslim, believers in the Islam faith. Most are law-abiding, peaceful. It's an accommodation for one religion, and that's my objection to it. It's not a Baptist college. It's not a Methodist. We have SMU here. Baylor's not too far away. We have a Catholic-affiliated university. I have no problem where it's funded by private funds or religions to have prayer rooms at all. But when you're talking a public institution, I think it's highly inappropriate to accommodate one religion. In essence, that's what they're doing. Now, you can go in there. Nothing's preventing you to go there meditating. The only reason I bring it up, and there's a fear, you only need one fanatic that gets it in his head that he, and they get it in the head because they're radicalized. And the reason I'm saying this is you have political radicals and you have religious radicals. Actually, Islam is not only a religion, it's a political ideology, where people use the religion to radicalize people, and they become terrorists and go out and kill people. And that's what we saw on that baseball field. Remember, the killer, the assassin, had a rifle. The police only had pistols. And if it wasn't for Scalise being there, the House Majority Whip, there would have been no Capitol Police. And this went on for 5 to 10 minutes. Before they even heard the sound of sirens. And, oh, yes, they were on their phones calling. So we were lucky. Now, I don't think President Trump is saying, I hope we get unified. I think he's being unrealistic. Because the people that I don't want to unify with them, Mr. Trump, not at all. These are lying, lunatic leftists. Oh, yeah, I'm being deliberately provocative because I want to describe what they are. I have very little in common with them. I would never vote for them or support them because they are the very ones that would disarm the American people. That's what they want. They're gun grabbers. I oppose that. It's important that we have the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms. Now, if the Democrats keep on making an issue, be my guess. They're not going to succeed, but they'll try and try and try. And they did succeed in the United Kingdom and Australia. And what's happening in the United Kingdom today? We've had terrorist attack after terrorist attack. And also crime has gone up. House invasions have gone up. The reason you don't see that much in Australia is they have a rather strict immigration policy. They don't have open doors. It's difficult to immigrate to Australia. Now let's listen in again on President Trump.
And let's keep the Warmbier family and the Scalise family and all of the victims of the congressional shooting in our hearts and prayers. And it was quite a day, and our police officers were incredible, weren't they? They did a great job. Good job. And let us all pray for a future of peace, unity, and safety for all of our people. Thank you. And for Cuba. I am so thrilled to be back here with all of my friends in Little Havana. I love it. I love this city. And one of the big thank you. Thank you. Now, this is an amazing community. The Cuban American community. There's so much love. I saw that immediately. Thank you, darling. Oh, do I love you, too. What you've built here, a vibrant culture, a thriving neighborhood, the spirit of adventure is a testament to what a free Cuba could be. And with God's help, a free Cuba is what we will soon achieve.
How are we going to achieve it? We could have a vote in the House of Representatives and the Senate to remove the embargo on Cuba. That would promote a lot of trade and investment in Cuba. But it also would mean a lot of revenue that would go to support the regime. Remember, it's a communist country, a socialist country. Much of the property is owned by the state, and in houses, hotels, it's divided up amongst the ruling class. All nations have ruling class. They have a ruling class there. They have that property because they're a member and supporters of Castro's party. Yes, Fidel is dead, and his brother is getting up there in age. And yes, there'll be a, let's say, struggle for who will be the next dictator. But ultimately, it's up to the Cuban people to revolt. They haven't revolted because under communist regimes, the first thing they take away are the guns, the weapons. And the second is the press. Exactly what the Democratic Party wants, to do away with your rights to bear and keep arms. And they largely control media in this country, the television networks and the print media, even though newspapers are fewer and fewer and fewer. They're dying, as are magazines. Oh, there'll always be some newspapers and magazines. There's always going to be a few survivors. But today, people get their own information online. And totalitarian, authoritarian regimes limit access to the internet, whether it's Cuba or communist China, and to a lesser extent, the Soviet Union. It's difficult to overthrow regimes, especially one that's been in power for so long.
And I don't even mind that it's 110 degrees up here. This room is packed. You know, it wasn't designed for this. I'd like to thank the fire department. We are delighted to be joined by so many friends and leaders of our great community. I want to express our deep gratitude to a man that's really become a friend of mine. And I want to tell you, he is one tough competitor, Senator Marco Rubio. Great guy. He is tough, man.
Now, let me make a couple of comments about Senator Marco Rubio. I'm not a fan of his, mainly because the Tea Party largely got him elected the first time. And then he joined the Gang of Eight in Congress. And in foreign policy, he is a neocon. A neocon is not new and it's not conservative. They originate very much in the Democratic Party, the progressive portion of the Democratic Party. And they left the Democratic Party in the 70s and 80s when it moved further and further to the left, and they disagreed largely with the foreign policy positions of the Democratic Party. So they became the boat people and floated over, like many Cubans, to the Republican Party. Oh, yes, many Cubans abandoned the Democratic Party when JFK, in their opinion, abandoned them on the beaches of the Bay of Pigs. You see, progressives, whatever they call themselves, are very good in getting the nation into wars. They're interventionists, but they also like world organizations, whether it's Wilson, FDR, Lyndon Baines Johnson, Barack Obama. But now, what are the neocons doing? And Marco Rubio is one of them. I call them the warmongers. Now, if I want to be diplomatic, I'll call them interventionists. They are for an active interventionist foreign policy. And that inevitably, and I mean inevitably, gets us into war, sets us up for situations that get out of control. And they, many of them, really wanted Hillary Clinton, even though the Republicans wanted Hillary Clinton, because they agreed with her interventionist foreign policy. Donald Trump, at least when he was running, was the impression that many people got he was a non-interventionist. Remember, he repeatedly says, I was against the war in Iraq. Well, I wasn't. I was on the fence. I gave, and this is a mistake on my part, I gave the benefit of the doubt to who? George W. Bush. And I gave him the benefit of doubt because I thought the president has access to more information, and usually they do. But where was that information coming from? The CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, and very much like the media in this country, it has become, and colleges, has become a bastion of both liberals and progressives, Clinton supporters and Obama supporters. And yes, they want intervention, both domestically and abroad. And remember, it was the CIA had its biggest failure on September 1st, 2001. That was first and foremost, an intelligence failure of the Central Intelligence Agency for not connecting the dots. And they couldn't connect the dots because what did Clinton do when he was president? He cut the budget of the CIA by over a third. And that resulted in us not having human intelligence that takes years to build up across the world. And we largely have inexperienced young people. They were using it as a peace dividend. They cut the military. They cut the CIA. And you need, if you're going to go to war, you need intelligence. And the result was 9/11. And nearly 3,000 Americans died. Both people in the buildings, on the planes, and mainly the first responders. See, I'm for a strong national defense and a strong intelligence community. But there must be a balance. It must have civilian control. But it shouldn't promote an American empire, and that's largely what the interventionists want. Now, they won't say it in those terms. They're critical of anyone that says American empire, because what the communists and socialists used to accuse the United States of being is imperialist. Well, we are. It's an empire, folks. We have bases in over 100 countries. Nearly, I think, last time I checked, over 500 bases, small, medium, and large, but between 30 and 40 are large military installations. You see, the United States is no longer a republic, it's an empire. And the elites, the political elitist establishment, the leadership of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, promote the projection of power, the intervention in country after country, ignoring the fact that we're now in a situation where we can't afford it anymore, and the American people don't support it anymore. They're not listening to the American people. Donald Trump at least understood the American people are sick of this. Yet what are we doing today? We're fighting, we're picking sides, is largely what we're doing. And yes, our military, primarily Navy and Air Force aircraft, are supporting our allies on the ground, whether they be Iraqi Shia or Kurdish Sunnis. They're Kurds that believe in their Muslim, Sunni, and I emphasize that because there's the sworn enemy of
who?
The Shias, the Iraqis. But who are they fighting? The Islamic State. That's a radical group, Salafist. You've also heard the word Wahhabis. And where does that come from? Right out of Saudi Arabia. You see, the problem when you're an interventionist, you support mostly authoritarian or totalitarian regimes. You're picking not winners or losers, but which dictator or side do you want to be on? That's the danger of interventionism. And in Syria, there's no good side. And frankly, there is no good side in Iraq. Let's hear a little bit of Mr. Trump's speech, and then I want to switch news stories.
He is tough, and he's good, and he loves you. He loves you.
And he's a neocon interventionist, Marco Rubio.
And I listened to another friend of mine, Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, and I'll tell you, I loved what he said, and I appreciate it. Mario, I appreciated what you said.
Now, they're both hardliners regarding Cuba. My position on Cuba, let the representatives, your representatives, my representatives decide, and I think, and make it by law, whether to lift the embargo or not. I could argue either side of it, but it's up to the American people to make that choice, not executive orders by one president being overturned by another, and if, let's say, a Democrat gets in next time, they'll overturn this. That is not the way to have foreign policy. It's up to our representatives to make clear what is acceptable to the majority of the American people.
So much. In fact, I was looking for Mario. I wanted to find him. They said he was on stage. I almost dragged him off the stage to thank him, but now I'm thanking you anyway. Thank you, Mario. That was great. Really appreciate it. And I also want to thank my good friend and just a man who was of tremendous support in the state of Florida for being with us, Governor Rick Scott.
Now, why is Trump doing this? He's looking ahead to the midterms and the 2020 election and wants to make sure that he's going to carry Florida. And the Cuban Americans are an important voter base. And you're not sure whether it's going to go Democrat or Republican because a lot of Democrats retire to Florida. Let me skip ahead just a little.
A repressive and failed ideology throughout our hemisphere, and who once tried to host enemy nuclear weapons 90 miles from our shores.
He's referring to the Cuban Missile Crisis, where the Russians put missiles that could hit many cities from the Mississippi eastward, including Washington, New York, Miami. They snuck missiles in. We almost went to a nuclear war. Eventually, the Russians backed down because if we did go to nuclear war, they knew that no one would win. The United States would have millions of casualties, but the Soviet Union would be largely wiped out because we had a lead then, a significant lead. Not anymore, but we did then.
The Castro regime has shipped arms to North Korea and fueled chaos in Venezuela. While imprisoning innocents, it has harbored cop killers, hijackers, and terrorists. It has supported human trafficking, forced labor, and exploitation all around the globe. This is the simple truth of the Castro regime. My administration will not hide from it, excuse it, or glamorize it.
Now, this is very important that he said. This is the President of the United States saying it. You had people in the Obama administration that praised Castro and thought what they were doing was right. I can remember, because I'm a little older than a lot of you, where a lot of leftists went to Cuba to work in the cane fields. They were for world revolution. They wanted to have a revolution in the United States. And Castro had and was exporting it. And he has suppressed dissent in his country. It is not a country you would want to live in. Communism, socialism ultimately fails, which it has. It's a country people flee from, not immigrate to. And you need to remember the track record of the Castro.
And we will never, ever be blind to it. We know what's going on, and we remember what happened.
I need to correct him. He remembers, I remember, we're in the same baby boom generation. But there are many young Americans, primarily millennials, but even Generation X, have no memory of it and really don't understand the totalitarian, authoritarian side of communism and socialism. As a matter of fact, they supported Bernie Sanders. That's how naive they are. They're the Kool-Aid drinkers, the true believers that lack critical thinking, really don't know what's going on, just nod their heads. And that's why I played this clip. We need to understand our history. And today, not many Americans have a clue.
Think of it. Nothing they got. They fought for everything, and we just didn't fight hard enough. But now, those days are over. Now we hold the cards. We now hold the cards. The previous administration's easing of restrictions on travel and trade does not help the Cuban people. They only enrich the Cuban regime.
And that's the key point takeaway. My suggestion, there are a lot of places in the United States to take your vacation, whatever floats your boat. If you like to gamble or like the shows, go to Las Vegas, Reno, wherever. But don't go to Cuba, because you're only enriching the small apparatchik, the supporters of Castro, and you're not helping at all the Cuban people. Now, the second story I want to address, and I don't have much time, so I'm going to, but there's not much other than to point this out. Remember what happened a couple of weeks ago, and it was sprung, or at least that's the story we're hearing, that the attorney general gave a heads up, a 30-minute heads up, that the deputy attorney general had appointed a special counselor, Mueller, to head the investigation of the Russian interference in the United States elections. That's ostensibly what Mueller's going to be doing. And on the surface, if you look at his resume, his background, he, like Comey, had a reputation of being a straight arrow, a man of integrity, can't be bought, was independent. Now, what do I think's going on here? And why was he appointed? Let me give you one theory. There are several theories, but one theory. Ultimately, President Trump will be exonerated. And given what we've seen so far, there's no evidence that President Trump, when he was a candidate, colluded with the Russians. That's not my opinion. That's what President Obama said, as well as his director of national intelligence. There's no evidence to that. And the news you hear, the propaganda you hear, is largely based on opposition research bought and paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign. And that's been used to try to say he colluded, when no real news organization can confirm any of the information in the report. It's a smear campaign. They were using that report, or tried to use it in the campaign. It just lacks credibility. That's why, with the exception of one outfit followed up by CNN, no one published a report on it or broadcasted a report. They had to get it out, even though it was false. Yes, that's the report that said Donald Trump paid prostitutes to urinate in the bed that Obama used when he was in Russia. Where's the evidence? They don't have any evidence. It's nonsense. So the theory is, we have this special counsel that won't find anything on Donald Trump. And I think that is what's going to happen. But who is he also hiring? And this is where alarm bells start going off. Former Obama and Clinton donors, as well as attorneys for them. In other words, Democrats that want to do in Donald Trump. That's why I get suspicious. So the question is, knowing this is happening, and this is the early stages, and remember, this is a very lucrative assignment here. You keep billing the government, and they do get out of control. Well, we've had special prosecutors. We no longer have that law, by the way. These are special counselors. There's differences. It can be open-ending. It goes wherever they want to go, and you don't know where that is. Not at all. Now, where should it go? Where should it go? And you would hope Mueller would do it, but they're not. Where do we really have evidence of crime? Misbehavior, misconduct, abuse of power in office. Yes, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, with her email server and the fact that she received as well as sent highly classified information and destroyed government documents. Both of those are crime, and she set it up to cover her tracks because the Clinton Charitable Foundation was getting huge, I mean million-dollar donations from foreign governments and foreign individuals. And then they would call the Charitable Foundation and they, in turn, requesting an appointment with the Secretary of State, which was given, and then he would meet with the Secretary of State. They want access. What they want varies from country to country. That's why you want access. And the ear of who? Most likely the next president of the United States, and her husband is the former president of the United States. It's pay for play. There is a ton of evidence. And the only thing that Comey would not pursue, because he so said he couldn't find no reasonable prosecutor would pursue it. That's nonsense. They're lined up around the block many times that would have done it, because Comey misled the American people and said you had to improve intent, which you did not have to do. And now we find out that Loretta Lynch, no surprise there, did obstruct justice by telling Comey, don't call it an investigation. It was an investigation. She ordered him to call it a matter, just like the Hillary Clinton wanted to call it a matter. It wasn't a matter or a security review. It was a criminal investigation of the activities of Hillary Clinton, and they had the evidence. It's not open and shut, but there's a ton of evidence. But we haven't even dealt with the pay-for-play aspects of it. Now, I've given whole shows on. Now, in addition to that, who else has abused power? And we're just finding more about this. The president and his national security advisor, Susan Rice, yes, that's Susan Rice, were using reports that they received from who? The National Security Agency, the CIA, and FBI, where there was communications between foreigners, mainly Russians, and individuals in the Trump campaign. Now, and they were looking for dirt. They were looking for leverage. Now, they didn't find any. There was no October surprise because, ladies and gentlemen, if they had found the smoking gun, the evidence, it would have been released in October at the very latest, the day before the election. They didn't find anything, but they were misusing for political purposes the intelligence community, and that's a felony. That's a crime. It starts with the president. It also goes to Susan Rice and the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, and I think even possibly, I don't know, James Comey. And the problem with James Comey, who is his best friend, mentor? Oh, Mueller is the special counsel. That's a conflict. You see, I no longer believe that this was a good decision. As a matter of fact, I think it was a terrible mistake to appoint this gentleman, no matter what his reputation is, for the simple reason he has a close personal relationship and he coached James Comey what to say in his hearings, at least if you believe James Comey. He's conflicted. I believe it's time to have a criminal investigation pursued by the Department of Justice, headed by the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, into the Clinton email server, the emails, and the activities of the charitable trust, as well as the activities of the Obama administration during the campaign, the misuse and abuse for political purposes, looking for leverage, dirt, blackmail on Donald Trump and the people in his campaign by unmasking the names of American citizens, which is not done. Remember, the FBI, the CIA, the national security agencies, and the other members of the intelligence community, but those three primarily, they do the investigation. They gather intelligence, primarily for who? The consumers of that information, consumers, underlying consumers, the White House, and other agencies. to formulate policy. It is not the role of the White House, the consumers of intelligence, to write those reports and do the investigation. And that's why they had to ask primarily the National Security Agency, but others in the intelligence community, to unmask them. And that's what they were doing. Again, to see if they came up with anything that they could use in the campaign. Ladies and gentlemen, this is never done. This is a scandal many times worse than Watergate. It's an abuse of power. It's a crime, a felony. And yes, presidents, once they're out of office, can be indicted for their crimes, and it extends right into the Oval Office. And it involves the immediate advisors of the president, not only Susan Rice, but Valerie Jarrett and Attorney General Lynch and others in that administration and their staff. Yes, it needs a complete, thorough, independent investigation. But we saw what happened when you appointed, or the Justice Department, the deputy appointed a so-called special counsel. He goes out and hires people that are also conflicted. They've given money to the Clinton campaign. They've been lawyers for the Clintons. That's the real scandal. That's the real crimes with evidence that should be pursued. Bottom line, I recommend that President Trump fire Mueller. Take your time in doing it, but do it at the right time, sooner rather than later, because this, as you described it, Mr. President, is a witch hunt. And as much as he has a sterling reputation, the people he hires are partisans. They don't support you. What this really is this is a political establishment in Washington forming a hit squad to go after Donald Trump. Mr. President, you need to take the offense. You need to fire him, and you might have to fire the Deputy Attorney General, Rosenstein. And the sooner you do it, the better. Don't delay, because this is the political establishment, the bureaucracy going after you, and they don't support you. The bureaucracy doesn't, whether it's NSA, CIA, or FBI, neither does the leadership of the Republican and Democratic parties. My time is up. I'll close it out by playing my favorite song, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.